So with that, we will get right into our topics this morning. First on the agenda is Peter Murray, who's Assistant Director for New Service Development at OhioLINK, a consortium of higher education institutions in Ohio. Peter's current activities include exploring technologies for the evolution of discovery layers and back office streamlining. This morning, he's going to be talking about discovery tools and the OPAC. Peter.
Thank you. I'm going to be talking this morning a bit about discovery layers and the OPAC, a bit of an outline for the presentation, starting with a taxonomy of schemes to enhance the web OPAC. And I realize, you know, right off the bat that it's not very interesting to talk strictly about the web OPAC, but these techniques and so forth, while I'm focusing on the web OPAC, have applicability to other discovery systems. Next, I want to talk about a list of features and functions that are commonly attributed to next generation systems. Then I want to give a brief tour of some of the OPAC tools that have these next generation functions to them, and finally wrap up with some parting thoughts. So the first thing we'll talk about is a taxonomy of ways to enhance the OPAC. The first, and these kind of go from a basic, very easy thing to do all the way to the very complex, as you'll see in a moment. The first thing that you can do, of course, is add on an enhancement to your existing ILS. If you're an innovative customer, you can go from Webpack to Webpack Pro. You can buy modules that enhance it. We'll also see in a moment a example of library thing, which is something that you can add to just about any OPAC to bring some of the functionality of library thing to your full record displays. Going up a layer from that is you can wrap the OPAC in something else. First of all, this is not my child. I was looking for something cute to, you know, talk about wrapping your OPAC. And in our tour of enhanced OPACs, we're going to look at SOPAC from Ann Arbor Public Library. They have a wrapper that goes around their innovative system that adds tagging and other kinds of next-generation functions to it. The underlying web OPAC is still there, but it's, in effect, completely hidden from the end user in this wrapper. From there, you can stop using your web OPAC from your ILS entirely with a web OPAC replacement. This typically involves things like exporting your bibliographic data into another system that's indexing it, some function that looks back into your integrated library system for statuses and so forth. This is where a lot of activity is right now in terms of commercial products and open source developments. When we get to the tour of enhanced OPACs, we're going to see a variety of them here. I think I've got 4 commercial and 4 open source examples here. And finally, last but not least, is the forklift upgrade, which is to take your existing ILS and replace it with something else that has as a byproduct an enhanced OPAC with it. Something not to be taken lightly, but, you know, on the extreme of simply tweaking the HTML or buying a couple new products for your existing OPAC, this is the other extreme, the forklift upgrade. So briefly, I wanted to talk about some of the next generation OPAC functions. And if you're interested in a more comprehensive look at this, I recommend Marshall Breeding's Library Technology Reports. This issue is dated July, August 2007. It's available from the ALA store. He not only goes into depth about the functions and describing them, but he also takes a look at the commercial landscape with Aqua Browser, Encore, Primo, and WorldCat Local. In our tour, we're going to take a brief look at those 4 as well. So look to there for perhaps some more words about what I'm briefly going to go through. The first thing that we commonly associate with next generation OPACs is some sort of suggested search modifications. And in this screenshot, it takes the example of Google, which as you're typing is suggesting changes or modifications to your search terms. What also falls into this category is the classic did you mean dot 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 when you misspell something or when the system might have no hits and wants to suggest a search that would get some hits for you. Next is faceted browsing. This is all the rage now of a very extravagant form of post-search limiting, if you will. But post-search limiting a bit differently because on the screen it is putting the headings and the terms that you'll find under those headings and usually in rank order by number of hits that you would get if you were to execute that post-search limit on your results set. So it puts the possibilities on the screen for the user so they don't have to think about these kinds of things as they're forming their initial search query. Next is persistent links and URLs. I probably can't read this from the back, but the caption that goes along with the graphic is this is an artist's conception of one of the large warning monuments that also serve as information centers on the crest of the Yucca Mountain after permanent closure of the proposed geologic repository. This is the monumental task of warning future generations of the proposed nuclear waste dump site there. You have to think about when you're designing these kinds of things, you know, what is a monument that's going to last millions of years to warn humans and their cyborg descendants that you're going to have something dangerous under the ground here. The URLs that we're expecting out of our systems, well, it would be nice if they last millions of years. I don't think any of us are thinking along those lines. But we do want persistent links, commonly called permalinks in the vernacular of web blogs, to the items in our catalog, even to the searches that we're executing. Most next generation systems will offer permalinks with one notable exception that we'll get to in our tour. The next thing users are expecting is some sort of syndication service. Give me what's new about this search. Give me what's new about this particular item if people have posted comments to it or reviews on a particular item. We've seen these things with saved searches in some of our tools that will email us responses. This notion of syndication, though, is a machine-generated notion of those saved searches where they can be processed by other machines or displayed in a newsreader or some other mechanism. Next thing users want to do is have user-supplied tagging. They want to apply their own vocabulary to items. One of the speakers mentioned yesterday the kinds of controlled vocabulary things that we do now are valuable, but the users want to put their own spin on the item, describe it in their own words so they can get back to it with their own mental models of what this item is. Most of the tools in our tour are going to allow for this, with some exceptions. If you're doing user-supplied tagging, maybe you also want to do user-supplied annotations. They can take the form of comments, reviews, in some cases, perhaps even modifications to the underlying record itself. This is one of the fascinating things I think about the Open Library Project out of the Internet Archive, is that they're starting from a basis of loading MARC records and records from anywhere that they can get, but then they allow the users to make changes to those records in a wiki-like fashion. I don't know if we want users changing our records. Perhaps we don't trust them as much, but at least some sort of user-supplied annotation to those records. We want to make our screens look pretty. I want to add book covers, images of the book jacket to them, give the user, again, an idea of what they're getting into when they're looking at this digital surrogate of what could be a physical item on a shelf. And they're also looking for recommendation engines. If you liked this item, you would also like... Are there any Unix geeks in the room? A few? Do you get the humor here? No? Okay. I told you the humor wasn't going to get any better. Users that checked out this item also looked at this one. Or this item is part of this topic. Would you like to look at the resources and the overarching target? Users also want to, kind of going along with the permalinks and the permanent URLs, they want to have this item be a target of some of the social networking tools. Every social networking tool has a 16 by 16 graphic associated with it. So if you use the tool, you'll probably recognize the graphic that goes along with it. Delicious, of course, is the third on the top row. What else do I recognize here? The SU here is stumble upon. I think I would probably fail this test. Yahoo, of course. Google, of course. Well, in any case, I mean, there's an explosion of these social tools that users want to reflect their own categorization and their own interests in. So they want to post that permanent URL to one of these tools so that they can get back to it. So that's the list of, gone through a list of techniques to enhance OPACs. We've gone through a list of tools to, we've gone through a list of things that users want to do in terms of next generation interfaces. We're now going to take a tour of some of the popular systems that are out there to enhance OPACs, and I'm going to violate every rule of speaking by joining you in the audience here. Hi, how you doing?
Great.
You didn't know I was going to do this, did you?
I knew someone was coming.
You knew someone was coming because I have my laser pointer here. Hi, how you doing? So we're going to start with, and I want you to know that this is a snapshot, of course, of what we have today, March 28th. This is a very fast-moving field, and so if you're listening to the NISO recording of this, know that it is March 28th, 2008, and things have likely changed by March 29th, 2008. We're going to take these in order of the taxonomy of schemes to enhance the OPAC. And so the first one we're going to start with is an enhanced OPAC. This is the Claremont University. We're going to do a title search for the long tail. This is an innovative interfaces system. Select the first one there. By itself, this doesn't look very unusual, but as you scroll down, you start to see some things that aren't in your typical innovative interfaces catalog. The similar books heading here and the library things tag here. We're going to click on the long tail as a user-submitted tag. We get the lists of what other users have tagged this as, related tags, books, and other books that are tagged the long tail. We clicked that link and we went right back into a record at the Claremont catalog. And if we scroll down, we see the same similar books here and library thing tags here. This is getting inserted via JavaScript, and so I'm going to tell my browser to disable JavaScript and then reload this page and show you what it looks like after that. We scroll down to the bottom of the screen here, and where that information was before is no longer there. This was something that was added to the Claremont catalog via a bit of JavaScript, and once you turn that off, or if you have a user that's browsing without JavaScript, then they don't see this. Claremont College did this without the assistance of Innovative, or at least they did it with the assistance of Innovative, in the sense that they're just using tools that Innovative already provides in their Webpack Pro OPAC. So this is the one example I have of OPAC enhancements. As I indicated, I have one example of an OPAC wrapper. This is from the Ann Arbor District Library. We're going to do a keyword search for Warriors in the Wild. This is an innovative Millennium site, and you can sort of see that, actually, if you keep track of the URLs up here, if you keep an eye on that. as we scroll down, we can see that there's two patron reviews for this item. We're definitely out of the Millennium OPAC now. We scroll down and we see that the two user reviews here, we can even see that one of the reviews has a comment on it. So we have comments on the reviews as well. Let's get back to the underlying record itself. And also note that here they have some user-supplied tagging as well. So we'll click on the tag for cats. Right up at the top, we get all sorts of Lillian Jackson Braun titles. But if we scroll down a little bit, we'll also see another one here that shares the cat tag, Woofy the Wonder Dog. But some user put the tag cats onto this for some reason. Ann Arbor Public Library or District Library has an interesting images of their card catalog that they're putting in. That's a neat touch. They also recently added a link to look inside the book. I'm going to have the browser open this up as a separate tag or a separate tab in the system. Up here, they also have a link to the record enhancements from Syndetics. Again, this would normally open in a new window, so I'm going to tell the browser to open it in a tab. They have this as a source of cover images. They also have the summary from Syndetics. So that is Ann Arbor District Library and the one example of OPAC wrappers. So next we get to a long list of OPAC replacements. Is everybody still awake back there? I realize the danger of doing this. I can't actually see you now, and you may have left the room. I'm not sure. So we're going to look at OPAC replacements, and we're going to do this alphabetically, starting with the commercial solutions and then going to the open source solutions. And so we're going to start with A, Aqua Browser. This is their canonical demonstration site at Queen's Library. My daughter, 6-year-old daughter, is very much into unicorns, and so this is actually a very similar thing that my wife did. My local public library has Aqua Browser and was searching for things for unicorns. You can see off to the left here is the list of facets associated with this. We can click on books. The center panel here is going to change, and everything over here in the right pane in terms of the facets and their numbers of records underneath those facets are going to change as well. So we were running out of unicorn things, and my wife, when she did this search, noticed that there's pony over here. And once again, 6-year-old daughter, she's very much into ponies as well. And so clicking on this in the concept map, we get things that have not only unicorn in them, but also some form of pony, which made my daughter very happy for the short period of time before we exploited all of those items in our local public library. Notice that there's an RSS feed here. If we open this in a new tab, we see the available feeds here. Queens Public Library, new releases, upcoming events at Queens Library, and also the third one here, new items that meet the search term for ponies. I do want you to note, though, that as we were going through all of these changes here, this is the one that doesn't provide permalinks. This URL up here has not changed, and so one of the things I fault Aqua Browser for is not giving me the capability of, in effect, saving the context of this particular search. I have to describe it as a series of links if I want to reproduce this at a later time or tell my neighbor's 4-year-old daughter that she might like some of these things as well. So one thing I fault Aqua Browser for. And I've told them that, and they said, oh, well, that's a very interesting thing. We'll get back to you. So next on our list, alphabetically, is Encore. Going to do a search for web accessibility here. We're going to swap the location of the facets. In the previous example, they were over on the left. In this example, they're on the right. I'm not sure if this is an area for standardization or not, but it is kind of confusing bouncing back and forth left and right between these various systems. We clicked on Internet Resources over here, and there was a red mark here that we could use to remove that limit. There's also, we can expand the list from the default 5 to all. Over here we have a list of tags associated with this. These are not user-generated tags right now. Innovative is working on that. These tags are actually coming from the subject headings. And maybe in our later speaker this morning, we'll hear more about Innovative's work with this. But we selected the tag website development to refine this, and we can once again remove that limit by clicking on that red icon. One of the things that Innovative does very nicely when we get into the review, or when we get into the actual item, is this list of results over here in this vertical display. And I can move between the results by clicking in this result list here and have a real sense as to what the next result is going to be. I don't have to jump back to the results screen. Underlying this is, an OPAC replacement. The underlying OPAC is still here, and in this case, it's a Voyager system, and that link there allows us to get to the location, call number, and availability. I get back to the results, and I think we're done with Encore. So next on our list is Primo from Ex Libris. I forgot to thank, as I was doing the Innovative Encore demo, thank them for being a sponsor of this event. Also thank you to Ex Libris for being a sponsor. We did a search for networking and it was misspelled. We saw an example of the did you mean with the spelling correction there. We have to do a little horizontal scrolling to get to the facets listed. We've jumped again over here to the right. See a little bit of changes in the facets that are offered. I don't think we'd seen the call number classification, which was up there earlier. We're going to limit this search that we just did to University of Minnesota Internet Resources. We can then click on the remove link to remove those results if we that limit if we wanted to. We can then, another limit is limit by date. If we scroll down here, we'll note that it was previously after 2000, and there's now been a refinement here, 2002 to 2004, and then after 2004. We clicked on a particular item, the Zero Configuration Networking, the Definitive Guide. We have some functions over here, user-supplied tagging. We have some limited social networking capabilities here. Push this item to, and you saw the drop-down list. That's Ex Libris, Primo from Ex Libris. One more in the commercial space is WorldCat Local. And looking at WorldCat Local right now from the perspective of Ohio State, I'm going to do a search for procrastination, which is one of the things I encountered when creating this presentation. And we saw the drop-down list that Mike Teets was talking about yesterday in terms of scope of this search. We scoped this search to Ohio State items right now, so you see a great deal of held by the Ohio State University, along with the facets again here on the right. Limit this to psychology. Note one thing, though, that WorldCat Local doesn't give us the ability to explicitly remove that. We'd have to go use the back browser, a back button in the browser to do it. But we do get to change the scope to libraries worldwide. And as we scroll down here, we'll see things that are not from, well, I guess we're not going to scroll down. Never mind. We're going to select a particular item here and scroll down here a bit under the heading Get This Item. WorldCat Local gives you the ability to punch right in the availability from your local OPAC. And then, as Mike was saying yesterday, two levels of above that, in this case, OhioLINK. We selected the Get This Request This Item button. We get popped up in a frame display where this is actually coming from the Innovative InReach Union Catalog at OhioLINK right now to select this item. So this top frame is OCLC. This bottom part of the frame is actually OhioLINK. And we're going to go through the first couple steps to request this item, your name, your identifying number, and then where you want to pick this up. So we'll go back to the item here. And I believe we're finished with WCAT Local. I need to pause here for a moment because I've been talking very fast. Are there any questions to this point? Yes.
Okay, tagging. I've looked at a number of Primo sites, and the number of tags that are being created is almost infinitesimally small.
This is not a Primo problem, by the way.
That's right. And so I'm wondering if the problem is a lack of critical mass in any individual library, and if everybody is looking at a way to seed a library catalog with tags imported from some other source.
I do believe that that's a way we need to go, that we're going to have to aggregate if we're not going to aggregate our OPAC interfaces and we're not going to aggregate into union catalogs, that some way to aggregate the tags, either by agreement with Library Thing to import their tags. They've got more users than a traditional, at least academic library catalog would have, but even you know, public libraries, they probably have more users. Or do something like Innovative has done with Encore, and that is to seed, is to have one pool of tags and to seed that pool of tags with the subject headings as a way to show and or encourage users to add their own tags to that. I hope I'm not disclosing anything out of sorts when I say that Innovative is looking at adding user-supplied tags to their Encore in a future release. Oh, very good. Yes, our Innovative person says that she'll be talking about that later this morning. And, you know, then there's going to be an interesting balancing act between how do you weight the vast amount of tags that you might get from your subject headings with the very few that you start to get from the users. So I'm very interested to see Innovative's work in that and how they're going to balance that out.
I also have, in addition to the critical masses, there's a, what's in it for me tagging question for very busy people. And one of the things that occurs to me that might be useful in an academic setting is if I'm a faculty member, I want to be able to tag things for my particular classes. But I guess I'm wondering if anybody's thought about the ability to go in and let the person who put the tag in change or modify the tags. Because I'm not teaching that class this semester. I might want to, I guess I more control over the tags. I don't know if that's
tags
out of the
temporal
question.
Scope, maybe.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anyone mention that, but that is certainly an interesting idea, kind of a difference in the way that academic libraries handle reserve lists, is that, go into the discovery tool and look for all of the things that I've tagged Psychology 101-Section A, and those are the things I want you to look at. An interesting idea. I think, I'm going to get myself in trouble because this is being recorded. Not a MARC enthusiast, let's say. And so I don't think that we're going to get a 6XX field or a 9XX field anytime soon to put tags into our MARC records. And so one of the areas, I think, in terms of is there a place for standardization is how to get those tags into our systems, share them, as the gentleman said over here, but then also to perhaps give them some of the scope that we talked about yesterday, temporal scope or location scope would add to that functionality as well. Library of Congress, ladies and gentlemen.
There is actually a MARC tag for uncontrolled subject term.
I
don't have the number off the top of my head. You're going to have to run me out of the library, but there is an uncontrolled tag.
Uncontrolled tag. So there is a 6X somewhere.
689,
683. No, stop! Okay. I'm now watered, so shall we continue with the tour? I think that would probably be a good thing to do. Okay, so like I said, we've done the commercial solutions. Let's take a look at the open source solutions, and we'll start with Blacklight. This is a beta project from the University of Virginia. They have a very interesting thing in that their main page starts with a list of facets over here with the number of records in all of these items right up front. So you could start your browse right here from the list. They've taken a very interesting approach to a next generation interface. We're going to look for librarian humor because we know it exists out there somewhere. despite my poor attempts at it this morning. This list over here has now changed to reflect the headings and the number of records in each based on our librarian humor attempt to find. We'll look at a full record here, Adventures in Libraries, do a little bit of horizontal scrolling over here to see a bit of social networking tools over here on the right-hand side. Let's go back and what am I doing? I don't know why I'm doing this, but, you know, I remember down here at the bottom. This is one place where they've integrated not only their OPAC items, but their items from their digital collections. In this particular case, we're going to open this link in a new tab, and it's actually an EAD document from their digital library. I don't believe this is in their OPAC. I believe their Blacklight discovery layer is indexing a couple different silos. One is their catalog. Another is some of their silos of digital collections. Okay, so we're back up here now. We're going to search for fiction. And this is also something else very unique about Blacklight, in that was not a new search. That was a text filter applied to the previous search results. And so in order to do, in effect, a new search for fiction, I have to remove the term, the text filter library humor, and we'll give it just a moment. And now this is all of the results of searching for just fiction in the catalog. I think that is Blacklight, okay? Next one is, the FACBAC OPAC from Paul Smith's College. Doing a search here for early American cooking, they're a Dewey library here, so where we saw LCSH or LC call numbers here before, we're now seeing Dewey ranges here. Once again, facets along this side. They also have the ability to drill down in this Dewey range. That was a 600 to 699, and if we drill down into it, we can get to a further refinement of that. They also have this, were you searching for this topic, a form of a recommendation engine based on the subject headings of the results set. Did you want to search for a particular topic? So not looking for particular items, as we saw with the library thing example, but looking for particular topics based on the subject headings. That is the FACBAC OPAC from Paul Smith's College. Next on the list is Scriblio from Plymouth State. This has a very nice interface here. We're doing the same thing Google does here, where we start to look for a search term here, and then it pops down various things that match that to give the user some assistance. Scroll over here to see the facets that we're browsing. Ignore this, some coding problem, books to books, or book to books. But as we scroll down here, we're going to get to an item that has a comment on it. Targets for research and library education has one comment. So we'll look at the full record here, see that there's some ability to expand this search more by this author, explore this subject, along with some social bookmarking tools over here. We'll get to those in a moment. But we can scroll down here to see the one comment, and right above it, what is library education? We can see the related items. They've added, some of the social bookmarking tools. So here, I think they did a really nice job. If you don't know what these icons mean, they actually list them off to the side here. That's a nice bit of education. RSS feeds for this, translations, again, related items. That you can also go to see this item in the underlying OPAC. Once again, this is an OPAC replacement, so they've exported their records and indexed them separately, but they do provide a way to get to the underlying catalog. You have the ability to look at this item in the Google Books project and go back in the browser. Also an interesting item, text this to your cell phone is an interesting possibility as well. And if you remove this limit and you just start with this display, this is a chronological order of items as they're being added to the catalog. So the top one as of 2 days ago was a copy in process for their collection. So if we were to scroll down the list or start paging through the 20,669 pages, we would see, at least at some point, we'd run into a problem, but the order in which items were added to this catalog. So, I bet this RSS link that's embedded in the page would be a new book discovery syndication service. So that's Scriblio from Plymouth State University. I think I've got one more. I've got ViewFind. I'm going to do a search for marriage in America. This is ViewFind's demo system here, as you can see by the URL. Again, we've got facets here on on the right. It switches back and forth, left or right, left or right, left or right. In this case, on the right, see the possibilities there. Very broad 20th century era here. But as you navigate into that, I believe we're going to remove 20th century area there. I think as you scroll down, there's a further refinement then of 20th century into decades. Search for or do a look at the bibliographic page for Alone Together. Here is the headings. Here's the comment field. Be the first to leave a comment on this item. Reviews, and in this case, reviews are coming from Amazon. These are not, ViewFind doesn't seem to have the ability to add reviews yourself. Instead, they're looking to Amazon.com for these reviews. More on Amazon.com later. And of course, if you want the Mark view, you can get the Mark view. They do have user-supplied tags. Somebody has tagged this with marriage, and we look at that tag, and we come up with two hits, and we can see the results the full record for that other one that was tagged marriage. Also note here we have a recommendation engine of items, not topics as we saw previously, but items based on this particular search. So that's the tour of the 10 systems I wanted to show you. There were some that I didn't show for various reasons. One was PenTags, which has gotten a lot of buzz as well. Very nice system. I tried to limit the scope of this to stay in time, which I'm doing a rather poor job of. I have 12 minutes left. to those that were available in open source. Poke, poke, Michael, Pentags. Please. I should be the straight man for this. Worked out well. So maybe the next time I do this, I'll have Pentags will be open source, and I'll do a demonstration of that. Also missing here is kind of the granddaddy of next generation OPACs, NDECA. And the reason I admitted that was because NDECA itself is a toolkit. It's not really a product that you can install or an open source system that you can layer on. With NDECA, you get a toolkit with which you can create your own interface. Maybe poke, poke, NCSU, think about releasing your you can't, of course, release NDECA, but you could release your underlying code into open source to let us take a look at it. So, leaving now with some parting thoughts, some calm Friday lake view. In the open source arena, one of the things you have to look at, of course, is if you take on an open source implementation, you also, there's no such thing as a free lunch or no such thing as a free kitten. You have to take on, in some respects, the maintenance of that underlying open source system. And so, you know, as you look at options, part of what you might look at is your underlying technology strengths. And in this case, we have a large wealth of options here. Blacklight is written in Ruby on Rails, plus Java using Solr for the underlying indexing. FactBack OPAC is written in Python, again with Java for the underlying Solr-based indexing. ViewFind is written in PHP, once again with Java for the underlying indexing engine. Scriblio is layered on top of WordPress. It's a WordPress module, so if you have experience with WordPress in your shop or PHP in general, that might be something you might want to take a look at. And also, you know, we saw in some of these examples APIs that are popping through into these next generation interfaces. We saw the direct calculated permalinks into Google Books to see the Google Books display of a particular item. We also saw book covers. Those book covers might be coming from Syndetix. They might also be coming from the new API from Google that allows you to link to book covers images there. They might also be using the Amazon API to get to images there. You know, one thing to note, though, about Amazon is that if you read the terms of use with the Amazon API, Amazon provides this API to lead users to Amazon so that Amazon can sell them the book. And so if you use their API, you're supposed to link back to the Amazon page for that. I didn't, in this investigation here, I'm not an investigative reporter or an IP lawyer for Amazon, so I didn't check and see if some of those cover images, or in that one case where they were getting the reviews, are actually linking back to Amazon, but you might want to be concerned about that. And now there's just in this month released the API from Google, which doesn't have those terms of use restrictions associated with it. Google's not trying to sell you books yet. And we're also, as Mike was describing yesterday, the world of WorldCat is opening up in APIs and the WorldCat grid services. So, you know, I think we're going to start to see some real explosion of possibilities in our next generation interfaces based on that. So we've come to the end of my presentation. I go by the moniker, the Disruptive Library Technology Jester, in case you couldn't have told by my poor jokes here. And my blog address is up there. My presentation, as you might gather, is not great in isolation. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to post I'm going to put a post on my blog there that has the URLs to the products and the demos that I've talked about today. If there's interest from the community, I'll also see about posting the videos, the screencasts that were part of our tour online as well, although, you know, without the color commentary, I'm not sure how useful that would be either. So with that, I have about 7 minutes left for questions. We're going to do the Oprah style here.
I don't have a question so much as a comment. I can't let your jab at NCSU stand about releasing our code. I'll just say that...
I'm the jester here, you know. I'm poking at you.
Well, we are unable to make it open source. We certainly do share that code with other libraries who purchase in DECA. So if you take a look at FCLA's interface, you'll notice that it is startlingly similar to what our interface was for the last 2 years. So definitely, if there are any libraries that are interested in purchasing in DECA, we do try to share code.
Oh, thank you.
Amongst that user community.
Okay. So not released in open source, but if you come and ask, you'll be kind to the community.
Yes, we even have an Indeca library users group and things like
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Very, very small and young, but we're trying to build community.
Good for you. Good for you. Thank you. I retract my poke.
I don't know if this is a question for you, but I just noticed that so many of the search engines you were showing had opportunities to comment on the books, and we saw some of the comments there. Coming from the world of bloggers, it's a constant battle for us to deal with spam comments or objectionable comments or other sorts of comments. I'm just wondering if you or maybe somebody else here could answer how librarians are addressing that issue.
I'm not intimately familiar with the tools here, some of the underlying techniques to know how they might be addressing comment spam. I would be willing to bet that at least the ones based on underlying blog technology, we saw WordPress in Scriblio, the SOPAC from the Ann Arbor Public Library is based on Drupal, I believe. And so, there are tools that you can get a Kismet for them, you can get Big Brother for them, you can apply the various openly available tools for that. None of the examples I show had reCAPTCHA, for instance, but that's another possibility. I think as part of the consequence of opening up our records for comment, if you will, we do take on the responsibility of policing those comments, if you will. And it's probably happening behind the scenes here with the standard tools, I would imagine.
What we're doing with Webpack Pro, the community reviews module, and with and actually the ratings feature, which is free, and with the tagging in Encore, is you have to, because it's a personalization feature, we need to know who you are so you can edit it later or delete it later. You have to log into your patron record, and that gets rid of a ton of problems because the library knows it's you. So people tend not to be irresponsible with the comments. At least it gets rid of the comment spam problem.
That was Dinah from Innovative Interface.
Just a comment on a suggestion earlier about faculty maybe wanting to assign tags for particular courses. Our experience in electronic reserves is that they want to put the same things on reserve every semester or every year, and there needs to be a mechanism which isn't normally supported with tagging to hide the tags until that course comes up again.
Oh, now you're getting definitely more sophisticated.
Yeah, but they absolutely screamed at us. Yeah. What? I've got to recreate my reading list every year? I'm not going to do it.
Very interesting.
You talked about the issues of using open source and no free lunch and no free kitties.
Yes.
But I wonder if you had anything to say about some of the newer models where there are companies that will support these open source products as they develop. I'm thinking about like LibLime, and there's another one that I can't remember.
Equinox.
Equinox, yeah.
Yeah, boy. And you asked that question with 2 minutes left. The whole notion of open source is probably a presentation onto itself. But the short answer is I do believe you're onto something in terms of the marriage of open source with a commercial support organization. Of course, we've seen that in the world of Linux with Red Hat taking on a distribution and providing commercial support. We've also seen, the barest inklings of it in the library community as well with VTLS providing commercial support for Fedora. Is this a model that I think works? Well, it's, you know, it's not my keister on the line. I don't have a business plan for this. Is it a model that I believe will work? Yes, I do. And I think the library community is big enough that to support these organizations. If LibLime or Equinox or somebody else wanted to come out of the woodwork and say, you know, we're going to support Scriblio, we're going to support your installation of FactBack OPAC, that the possibilities are definitely there. Perhaps if I were a little more ambitious, maybe I would start a company to do that, but I'm not. So, and I don't know of anyone who is, at least at this point, unless anyone wants to disclose that in the room right now.
All right, one last comment.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. First, a disclaimer. I'm here as me, not the Library of Congress.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to poke fun at you so much.
But I'm going to give you an opportunity to do a little more poking, and you probably need more than a minute to do it. But in your survey of these various next generation OPACs, are there things that have come to your attention that you think could be changed in the way the underlying bibliographic records are created that would help these catalogs work better? I know you took a poke at Mark, and I think that's certainly something that the community is looking closely at for next generation, but are there practices that you think would make the facets work better, that you would make, you know, because we haven't changed what we're producing that underlies these to perhaps take better advantage of them?
Karen might come to my rescue here. I'm not coming up with anything off the top of my head in terms of what we could do to change the descriptive practice to support this, but like I said, Karen Schneider is going to hopefully have a comment on that.
I just wanted to put in a plug for Diane Hillman and Karen Coyle's work with the Dublin Core initiative related to RDA and how important that is. And it's a real standards focused effort, and I think it is related to this. I mean, also to put in a little pitch for Ferber, I mean, I really do think we need to look hard at the whole entity relationship model and really restore some of the concept of relationships in the data. And we need to start be thinking about data and not records. So, but especially the Dublin Core RDA effort could really use our advocacy.
And you know, you bring that up, Karen. It does bring to mind something else that maybe isn't poking at the standards themselves, but ways to get those standards exposed in more of a web architecture kind of way. Microformats come to mind, expressing some of that underlying data in RDFA and embedding it into the page, coming up with some standard practices for doing that so that tools like Zotero have a better time getting at that data. So I can't think of anything in the record structure per se, but working to expose all of that great work in the MARC record in a way that's congruent with the web architecture, so that other services can take advantage of it. Okay.
All right.
I am out of time. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you.